97.1 FM Talk. On demand audio.
Look, I agree with you. Terrible candidate. He's been kind of a grift all the way through. And the fact that these lib donors gave him $16 million.
They might have given him more, actually.
To watch him, you know, piss it away on this grift. I don't know where it went either. I assume the consultants all have fine beach houses all up and down the coast now.
All the consultants.
But it's a grift. He's been a grift for years, and he paid.
Yeah, that is Scott Jennings last night on this shocking victory of a DSA candidate in Florida that beat this Alex Vindman, the one that led to ultimately the impeachment of Donald Trump during his first term. Just amazing. One of the things we'd like to discuss with Martha McCallum, thrilled to get her on here from Fox News and the story with Martha McCallum there every day. Martha, welcome to the show. How are you?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me. Great to be with you.
It's great to be with you. You know, when I read this morning that this Angie Nixon in Florida spent about $700,000 and Vindman collected nearly $16 million and still lost, that has got to be sending shockwaves through the DNC.
Absolutely. I mean, Alex Vindman pretended like he wasn't even running against Angie Nixon. They had no debates. He basically ignored her throughout the course of the campaign. And it's really, as you point out, Mark, it's just a lesson in money and the difference that it sometimes doesn't make. She spent south of $1 million, as you say. He was at over $16 million. Everyone remembers Alex Vindman testifying against President Trump. And he was, at that time, sort of righteous and arrogant in his demeanor. And he's sort of accused of kind of doing the same thing in the Florida race, thinking that he was going to walk away with it. And he's probably pretty shocked this morning. But she has a lot of deep roots in the community. She was a union organizer. She's a state rep. She's very, very anti-DeSantis. She has done a sit-in in the governor's building. So she's a well-known person in the area. And of course, social media is free and is working really well for some of these candidates.
Yeah, well, she reflects all the views of everybody in the DSA. She wants to end jails and free health care for everyone. You know, I wonder, and maybe this is one of the questions you'll be asking today on the story, is what happens next? Like, is there any polling out on what that race looks like now? I mean, there's no way in red Florida she has a chance, right?
Yeah, I mean, who knows? She is the first DSA nominee of a major party. So it is a big win for her. She's going to be running against Ashley Moody, who's the current United States Senator who took Marco Rubio's spot. She was the former Attorney General under Governor DeSantis. So she is very credible. She has a very wide following. She is, you know, very solid in the hearings that she has been part of in the United States Senate. I think it's going to be a tough race for sure for Angie Nixon.
Gosh, it makes you question these polls, though, in general, after that polling firm came out and said that, yeah, we were really just doing this social experiment to see if we could have any sort of an impact on the election. So, gosh, you wonder when it's showing some of these candidates in the lead, are they really in the lead?
You know, I just think that polling at this level, we're all paying a lot of attention to these primary races around the country, of course, as we head towards the midterms. But primary polling is, you know, typically not great. It's very small sampling, very narrow scale. There's not a lot of money that's put into polling in these primary races. And I think we've learned in Michigan and Wisconsin that the polling, you know, was off by double digits in both places. So I think we got to just pay attention to what's going on the ground and not worry too much about the polling in these primaries, which still have a couple of races to be settled.
Yeah. Yeah. I've watched Martha, I'm sorry, as they've questioned the president on gas prices. And I listened to what some people thought was a pretty flippant comment from him the other day, is that, you know, you can deal with $4 gas for a little while if we can end the threat in Iran. And I've questioned here whether or not that's the message they should be sending, because the Democrats, for better or worse, have had a lot of success with this whole question of, you know, affordability. And I think they're going to hammer that between now and the elections. Do you see a change in approach by the administration at all on that?
Well, you know, I think you're right. And I think that the argument about this generational fight against Iran is, it sometimes gets lost in the shuffle when we talk about affordability and gas prices, which of course are very important. And we see that the president's, you know, back to polling and not, you know, I mean, I think generally national polling is a little bit more substantial than what we see in these primaries, but you know, the president is underwater on the economy. And, you know, so you can feel that kind of push and pull in his messaging on all of this. He's very aware of the concerns about that, but he also will say, you know what, this isn't about the midterms. This is about legacy and about history for the country. And we see Iran having this very, I think, surprising to the White House and to everyone, resilience. And it's hard for us to get inside the mentality of a revolutionary leadership.
Right.
And, you know, they don't really care if the people are suffering. They want survival at any cost. And I think they're going to just continue to up the ante. You know, the Institute for the Study of War, General Keane's operation said, you know, Tehran wants to raise the cost of all this for the United States. So, I mean, this is why being president is the hardest job in the world, because these are big decisions that he has to make right now. We've seen it go back and forth a bit. But I do agree with you that articulating the larger issue of freedom and the potential for the Iranian people. I think, you know, I have a number of guests on who are Iranians who live in the United States, whose families fled in 1979. And they were told, and so were the freedom fighters, to the extent that they could manage it in the midst of a massacre, that their hour of freedom was at hand and that, you know, the United States was going to support them. So we're going to see that there's way more chapters to be written in this story, and I hope in the end the Iranian people prevail, and the United States will be safer if that's the case.
It's amazing, Martha. I asked my friend Griff Jenkins this the other day. I'm like, do you ever just pinch yourself? I mean, we're in strange times these days, and every day there's some new breaking news of some sort across the world, and you're right there on the front page reporting on this history as it's happening. I mean, I love your work, but do you ever just sit back in awe of the times we're in?
Almost every day, Mark. Almost every day. And also the fact that I get to cover it, because it's an extraordinary moment. And I often, you know, will sort of step back and say to people, look, after the Trump era is over, it will be written about and talked about for decades. As we love to study the presidencies of our country, it is consequential, as the president likes to say, bold action that people have not taken in the past. I mean, the things that he's done in Iran, the two attacks in January, in June, and then February, people, you know, sort of war gamed these for years and years and years and didn't do it. So what's the outcome going to be? Nobody knows at this point. But the action is fascinating to cover. There's no doubt about it.
Martha McCallum, our pleasure having you on. We'll be watching the story. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be with you.
Yep. Take care. Good to get her on here. Yeah, it changed the paradigm. I've said it more than once. And you know, to a lesser extent for me and for Kim, to be able to cover these events as they happen as well, because whoever comes next, J.D. Vance, Marco Rubio, heaven forbid, Josh Shapiro or one of these Democrats, it's never going to be the same.
It's hard to imagine many presidents would have the guts to do what Trump is doing. He
Correct.
Doesn't care. And the fact that he is on his second term, I think, helps, because he's just going to lay it all out there knowing, hey, I don't have to worry about being reelected. I mean, this is kind of let's just put everything out there, and anything I'm thinking about doing, like bombing Iran, let's go.
Yeah. Yeah. Here we go again. All right. Quick break. We'll be back right after this.
Get more at 971talk.com.